Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast, so joining as usual, we've got Tim, we've got Purnell, we've got Chris, and we've got Brooke. How is everybody doing?
Really good.
Yay.
Hey.
I'm really tired, but that's fine.
I'm about on that. I'm on the end of the spectrum, too. But it was really cool hearing about when Brooke moved to the moon base last year. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it's air's thin up here, but it's very warm.
Fucking yeah.
I don't know what that means. Stop that.
It's very the warm. Timing of that was incredible, by the way, because Rootbeer just subbed and we got a fucking yeah at the most amazing time possible. Rootbeer, awesome. Thank you so much for the 31 month resub. That is insane. Thank you so much. We love having you here.
That's like a whole year.
That's like more than a year.
That's like a 2020 year.
That's multiple 2020.
I'm good, but I wasn't good until about 5 minutes ago.
Why? What happened 5 minutes ago? Besides joining this call.
Thank you for taking that bait. So I ordered a pizza for dinner, and they did that thing that all delivery people do now, which is they just left it at the door and didn't knock or anything, no update.
Wait, we're still sitting on the street.
Well, on the little table that we have outside the apartment, specifically because people keep doing this. So
eat your pizza.
I had to do half the job myself in that I had to cook this pizza before I ate it, and so I was munching on pizza literally, 10 minutes before podcast time. So now I'm good.
That makes me wonder. Like, I like cold pizza personally, but would I like cold pizza the same if it came cold?
No, I don't like paying for cold pizza. That's the thing.
Yeah.
If I'm going to pay the premium, put some temperature in it.
You have to make it cold on your own terms.
Exactly. That's like an interesting thing about, COVID times, in the sense where it's like, on one hand, it's like, even before COVID times, I had tons of respect for people deliver food, which is why I almost never do it, because I'm like, I don't want to bring somebody out if I can get up and do it myself. But when I really can, I'm going to get delivery. But
yeah,
true.
But they always had that thing where I was like, a lot of pizzas just were like, if you don't get it in a certain time, it's free. Or they'll say something like, just general customer service, we want to get a tip. But with COVID, it was like, okay, due to the fact that it's like a more strenuous time and the fact that no one wants to have that contact with each other, you kind of just tip in advance and just accept that the food will show up. And some folks took serious advantage of that.
Oh, I know. And to the point of cold pizza and paying for it. So my philosophy is that cold pizza is a free gift that you gave yourself when you had hot pizza.
Oh, wow. I love
when you
that.
Didn't eat all the pizza. You did yourself a
new life philosophy.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a Ninja Turtles saying where it was like, never pay full price for late pizza, or was it for cold pizza?
Forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for a late pizza.
Awesome.
Yeah, good man. You remember the exact one.
That's... the great philosopher Michelangelo.
It's words to live by. How do you?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Those were great movies, man. Like, even though people will knock the turtle suits that they wore.
What?
Personally, I'm fine
with
them.
Who knocks them? They look fucking awesome.
Yeah. Oh,
people they were made by the Jim Henson Creature
they
Shop.
They still look good today.
Well, first of all, let's get this out the way. It's the fucking internet, okay? People hate everything there. Secondly, yes. I agree with you guys. The Ninja Turtle outfits from then were freaking fantastic. But I feel like the movies themselves hold up, too. Like, some people might watch them and go, well, it was the cheesy early 90s. It was, Vanilla Ice made a song for it. It was cool. It still works. And I feel like having not read the comics, it was like the first time I saw even a bit of Grit gone. Because, the Shredder died in the first movie. Quote, unquote, died.
Raphael
was gritty. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. And if anybody hasn't watched it yet, that's your own damn fault. All right. But yeah, like Raphael.
You've had 30 years.
He really had. They really have. And honestly, if you weren't around back then and you're just getting to the Turtles now, one, welcome aboard, and two, holy crap, I'm glad you're doing it. You should still watch the movies because they're great.
It did get a little weird towards that third movie.
Oh, the Turtles go back in time?
Yeah,
Turtles. I almost want to say that, but then the cartoon had them doing weird crap all the time, so already used to it.
Yeah, the Fred Wolf cartoon was bonkers.
Where's especially the beef? Oh, there it is.
So, Purnell, I have a drink right now that was supposed to be yours if you made it to MAGFest, but you couldn't make it. So
it was specifically mine. Like, I'm going to taunt you with this drink.
Well, you can't have. Well,
there's a postal it's mine service, now. Man.
Yeah.
There's such a thing as the post office. You could have mailed it.
Do you know
it
how hard it is to ship beverages?
Does that say
put in a box with bubble wrap? Throw that shit in. You know how much extra bubble wrap you're probably sitting on? I got a box of it in the basement. Okay.
It is fantastic chocolate, Dr. Pepper.
I thought it said Fortnite chocolate.
Yeah, Fortnite chocolate, Dr. Pepper.
Oh, I'm almost surprised that doesn't exist. It's more crossover content.
How are you liking it? Is it good?
It's like a Tootsie Roll chocolate mixed with Dr. Pepper.
Oh, wow.
It's not like a milk chocolate. It's that artificial Tootsie Roll chocolate.
Okay.
So. It'll come with the chocolatey chew?
Yeah.
Man, I think I'm in love with it.
Whatever
it is, I think
it's okay. I prefer the Dr. Pepper and cream soda.
I can see that, honestly. But honestly, well, by that same token, though, there's something to be said about just getting limited edition beverages. And they're camping on that shit, too. They know what they're doing.
Those things sell for like $50 online for the 2-pack. It's nuts.
Wow. I mean,
people are just flipping them.
But the problem is, even with an understanding of, you know, production line, metrics or logistics, there's no real reason for these drinks to be as limited as they are. Like, what are they getting out of it? I don't even understand what they get out of it. They're not getting the second
promotion.
But the promotion would just be, we made this drink and we make it and release it every 3 months. That would still be limited.
The point is, they made me buy 7 cases of Dr. Pepper so I could get 2 cans of chocolate Dr. Pepper. I think they won.
But if you didn't get it for the soda, someone would have got a Dr. Pepper hat or some shit. I don't know. That's how they did it in the old days. Hey, if you drink these sodas and send in the UPC, you get a cool shirt. How many points does it take? 7,000. How many points you get per bottle? Half of one.
Remember the Pepsi points and someone like saved up and the million Pepsi points or whatever it was to get the jet in the commercial? And
they
sued Pepsi because they wouldn't give them a jet.
But someone did that?
Yes, I do remember that. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Honestly, I'm almost positive they did it specifically for the trolling. They knew damn well they were.
Yeah, that's back when the mini text at the bottom of screens didn't exist in commercials because common sense existed.
No, I thought that stuff was always there. Like, I was back in the day, like, my big thing was Kool-Aid points. Like, I used to stockpile Kool-Aid points to get stuff. I got a good chunk of my Game Boy library from Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think like Metroid 2.
I got Yoshi from them.
Yeah.
I feel like I got one other game from them at least. But it took a lot of points, but we drank a lot of Kool-Aid. So,
yeah. Kool-Aid's
like, so good.
It really. I think that's the funny part. Like, Kool-Aid is weird. Like, because is it good? You buy the pack, right? And the pack is just powder. And if you even just add it and put it in the water to make it the intended beverage, it tastes terrible. You have to put the sugar in, even some. If you went baseline Kool-Aid, that shit's disgusting.
And I it's supposed to be made mixed with sugar. They tell you on the packaging.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, but like, it's like weird logistics, like arguments, like, you know, the kind of discussion you have when you're drunk at the bar for no reason, like, is Kool-Aid really Kool-Aid?
They do sell the pre-sweetened Kool-Aid mix you could get, don't they?
Yeah.
Not the they sell pre-sweetened mix?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I wonder about that because it's like
blue Purnell's.
Purnell is in like a whole new world now. He's like, I can get pre-sweetened Kool-Aid mix?
I thought you were going to talk about like Kool-Aid Burst or some shit where it's already pre-mixed and you just drink it.
No, it's the powder mixed with mixed with sugar already, like hyper sugar. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh, the lazy
man. Yeah, like those larger containers aren't just the dust. They're
the dust and sugar.
Yeah. I mean, here I was being cheap all these years. Like, screw them. I'm not paying you for that. I got a whole container right here. The pack gives me 2 quarts. What do I need your container for?
So I have to wonder, like, so, you know, out of those, like, those tubs, you got, you know, a lot less Kool-Aid at the in the end result than buying, like, the 10-cent packets and adding your own sugar. I wonder if they, like, profited way more on those tubs.
They totally did.
Because they were, like, $3 tubs or something like that, but it was only, like, two 20-cent packets of Kool-Aid in there, and then the rest is just sugar.
I mean, I'm sure someone out there would probably say that they lost money on the pack and producing the packaging, but I'm like, they ain't lose enough.
Somebody get an accountant on the phone. We're going to figure this out.
So wait a minute. You're telling me you got me out of the bath to ask me about Kool-Aid? That is correct, sir. All right, let me get my pen and paper. We got a whole night over on the table.
I love the idea that the accountant is taking a bath in the year of our Lord 2022.
If I weren't so tall, I'd take a damn bath. Shoot, I miss baths.
Oh, we have a clawfoot tub here. Ashley just took a bath today.
Nice. A 12-foot tub.
Oh, a clawfoot.
Clawfoot.
Oh, I was about to say, do you raise horses in your house or something? Yes, we do. The previous owner raise horses?
I'm as big as a horse almost.
12-foot tub.
Horses are big, Joe.
Like, I wish, like, I haven't been able to sit in a bathtub in decades, and it sucks when you have muscle soreness. She's like, what do you do? Well, how about you just fill the tub, and you just put half your body in, the other half just hangs out over the floor, and then you switch.
Yeah.
Pernell, you would fit in our tub.
I have to keep that in mind. Like, how, you're visiting Joe. Yeah, he's got a bathtub. Hey, Pernell, I haven't seen him. What are you doing? Get out of the way. Just where's the bathroom?
Pernell shows up at the door with a towel and a shower cap on.
You'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, the accountant's already in there.
We've been talking Kool-Aid for hours in there.
He's putting in good work. It's okay. It balances out.
Like he's making Kool-Aid in there.
Hey, you know somebody's made some bathtub Kool-Aid over the years. Bathtub Kool-Aid. Or something, but
yeah.
The important part is bathtub Kool-Aid, and they made it work.
Bathtub Kool-Aid, there's the name of the show.
I guess.
Sold.
Yeah,
I mean, if you Google Kool-Aid bathtub, you are greeted with videos. So
you've already done it.
I mean, like I had like 20 seconds and idle fingers. Yeah.
And we have problems.
Kool-Aid problems.
You know what else we have? We have games to talk about.
Oh,
there it is.
None of which were sponsored by Kool-Aid, though.
Y'all ready to get to the reviews?
Yes. I would be if one was sponsored by Kool-Aid.
None are.
Damn it.
We don't have sponsors. No one likes
what
us.
What are we even doing here without Kool-Aid sponsoring things? Shit.
Talking about games?
Touche. Kool-Aid games.
First game to talk about tonight is called Windjammers 2, developed and published by Dotemu, released January 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. The best flying disc game of all time is back with amazing hand-drawn graphics, crazy new moves, gameplay mechanics, and awesome new characters and stages. Windjammers 2 is the sequel you've been dreaming of. Tim, tell us about your time with Windjammers 2.
All right, but first, a word from Kool-Aid.
Yeah!
Awesome.
The Great Blue Dini.
Chuckleberry Finn was the best one.
I really like Blue Kool-Aid. That's besides the point.
So Windjammers too.
You know, yeah, Windjammers. Well, no, Windjammers takes you back to the, you know, the 90s drinking Kool-Aid as a child. Yeah, Windjammers, the classic Neo Geo game that it felt like, I don't know, didn't really get popular until like 10 years after it came out. But that's fine. Because Windjammers is pretty awesome. For those that are not familiar, Windjammers is a sort of intense take on Pong. It's a way to put it, I guess.
Fair.
You have, yeah. I mean, you have a court, and on either side of said court is a net that you need to get the flying disc into, and each player gets a character. Which are all cool, rad 90s dudes or dudettes with sweet wraparound sunglasses and neon colored costumes. And you control your character and try to grab the disc and then throw it back at different angles in order to get it past your opponent or get it to just settle on the ground on their side of the court so that you can score points and win the round. A match is broken up into like a fighting game. It's a best of three. So first two wins the wins the match.
Well, just actually, 2 points, so or is it a certain number of points?
It's 15 points. It's 15 points
for so a
15 round. 15 points right. to win a round. Oh, and then, yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you know this, Pernell, but Pong is kind of a simple expression of tennis.
What?
Yeah.
Never heard that before. That is.
I thought it was a simple expression of ping pong.
Which is a simple expression of tennis.
My God.
A simple expression of capitalism.
It all makes sense. So you're telling me the Kool-Aid comes so with the sugar.
Then, yep. At the bottom.
I know. It shocked me, too.
So here we are. Windjammers 2, finally in 2022, almost 30 years later, made by .emu or Dotemu, however you may call them. Yeah, and they have not messed with it very much. Windjammers has a very solid formula that has withstood the test of time. Like I said, I don't remember this game in the 90s at all. And I was around playing Neo Geo cabinets, but the games that attracted my attention were your Samurai Showdowns and Fatal Furies and Metal Slugs and Magician Lords. I don't remember ever seeing Windjammers. Yes. I didn't hear about Windjammers for a long time thereafter. And I think the first time I actually played it was at a MAGFest at some point. A MAGFest at which there was a Windjammers machine and there was dudes dressed as Windjammers in neon windbreakers and shit, because that's just the kind of stuff that happens at MAGFest.
It is.
But yeah, and the game is, gained in such popularity that you see side tournaments being played at Evo in Windjammers. Like somehow it falls into the fighting game set. I shouldn't say somehow, because it's, I don't know,
they do it for Catherine.
It just works. Oh yeah, that's true. Catherine's in there too. It's something about intense head to head competition. I mean, in Windjammers, once you get into it, a lot of the kind of psychology of trying to outthink or fake out your opponent that you have in fighting games comes into play. So it kind of makes sense. But yeah, now Windjammers 2. Anyways, if you're familiar with Streets of Rage 4 in the art in that game, those crisp animated characters, that is the same you can expect graphically from Windjammers 2. The game still takes place from a top-down perspective. There's more characters than in original Windjammers. There's 10 and at least one hidden one that some dude busted out against me online out of nowhere. So maybe more than that, but at least 10. It all looks like all the courts, all the characters, all the, random background characters all look very nice and crisp. And just look really good and pop on the screen. They pretty much left the Windjammers gameplay, the feel of it, pretty much alone. The feel of grabbing the disc and the physics of the disc and angling it around to try to bounce it off corners or throw curve shots to get it around your opponent. That all feels feels very familiar from having played the original. It does not feel like they did much with it. I am not a high-level Windjammers expert. They may disagree, but to me, the layman, it felt really good. It felt like, okay, they knew not to mess with this part. They did, each character has kind of their own super shots, which you have a meter that you build up. And when you build up said meter, you are able to do the character's super shot. You can also do it if a character does a lob shot at you and you hang around under the spot where the disc is going to land, you can charge up power to do super shots that way. You can also bump the disc into the air to charge up a shot that way as well. But you do have the super meter to rely on. It will also, popping your super will help you, kind of instant dive to pick up a shot that might be far away from you, which is helpful. But so you have your standard grab the disc, which is on B or, the bottom button on a controller to grab the disc and then throw it back. And then you can use the point of the stick at the same time to sort of angle where the disc goes and how it curves around. You also still have the lob shot, the aforementioned lob shot, where it's okay, they're getting close up to the net or center of the court and you try to throw it over their head to land on the ground. I believe the things they've added to this game is you can now, there's a jump, so you can kind of bump the disc up in the air and then jump to spike it down.
Ooh.
And there is a slap, So if the disc is going by you, you can just hit the button and you'll swat at it and it will just immediately send it straight back across the court. Cause usually you grab it for a second and there's like a little bit more of a moment where, you know, the person has a chance to react. But if you're in position, you can just slap it. It's a real easy way to just like get a quick point. But you know, if you miss it, you probably just lost the point yourself.
Yeah. Just like you could slap it like Nate Diaz.
Yeah. You just slap it. You just
bitch like, slap the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You backhand that shit. And then it goes zing back across the court. So yeah, the gameplay is solid. Like it feels really good. There's lots of good options, and use of psychology, when playing against other players. The game, so you have an arcade mode for just playing through against AI opponents. They sprinkled in a couple of bonus stages, which is kind of funny, like a classic Street Fighter 2 beat up the car type thing, though you're not beating up a car.
Nice.
There's one where there's like a machine that like just shoots discs at you and you have to try to grab all of them. You get more points for swatting them actually. And then there's another one where you're like controlling a dog running down a beach after a Frisbee. Just really unnecessary, but you know, fun when you're hitting that 90s arcade style. Yeah, in arcade mode, you'll play through, you'll get like a choice of two different opponents, like leading up to the final. And then if you win the final, it's only like four or five stages long. After you win the final, like each character has their own like arcade like ending, which I appreciate and is some incentive to sit there and play through as every single character just to see their endings, with difficulty levels to make it more challenging for you. But the meat of the game probably for most people will be the online offerings where you have your ranked matches, your player matches. It does have that unicorn of a Switch feature where you can actually directly invite friends from your friends list to play against you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. An unfortunately small number of games have that, but Windjammers 2 is one of them. So if you and a friend have Windjammers, like and you're already friend coded up, you can just invite them just straight that way. And that's great. It has rollback netcode, which it seems like they delayed the game at least a year to implement. There's probably other things besides that, but I definitely saw news stories that was like, Windjammers 2 delayed to 2021 to add rollback netcode. Rollback netcode, which is kind of that is the standard for fighting in twitchy video games online right now. And you know, playing a few matches, it felt great. I didn't feel any lag playing against people online. It shows you how many players are online. I didn't have, you know, it was pretty quick getting in and out of matches. When you finish a match with someone, you can rematch with them up to two times. Like if you're, again, you can do a best 2 out of 3 matches with them, so that's cool. And you gain ranking points to rank up on the ladder. And that's the product, really. It's like they made a shiny new looking version of Windjammers. They didn't really change like the physics of the game. They just added a few new wrinkles to what you can do on the court. You know, they gave you the arcade mode to tool around in, and they gave you a good online foundation to play against other people, and that's the game.
And it has cross-platform too.
I would hope so. Yeah, yeah. I can't. I kind of hope everything coming out these days has that. I hope we're past that point.
Yeah, it'd be nice, but some games still don't. So you got to celebrate the ones that do, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Some great music in this game too. I cannot overlook that. Some cool appropriate music.
Nice. Well, the game is $20. For those who are on the fence, it's on Game Pass. So what do you think of this one?
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth a purchase, like just kind of straight up for $20. Obviously, you know, Game Pass, try it on Game Pass first. Yeah, it's too bad the limited run physical pre-order closed last weekend before the game came out. So like that's before the before the review embargo was up, so I couldn't actually come here and say like, hey, yeah, if you're really hype about Windjammers 2, get out there and pre-order it, because it's probably good. Nope, couldn't say that, but Yeah, but now you can. It's here. It's got great online. Like the game is fantastic for playing locally against other people. Windjammers is just like a lot of fun. The original is a timeless, super well designed game, and the sequel holds that up.
Cool, works for me. Next game to talk about is Startup Panic, developed by Algo Rocks, published by Tiny Build, released January 20th on Steam for $14.99. Quit your job and build an exciting startup, survive the tech bubble, compete with rival CEOs, and expand your office from bedroom programmer up to the heights of global corporate sabotage, as long as you don't get hacked or kidnapped. Pernell, did you get kidnapped?
I got hacked.
Well, one out of two ain't bad.
In a way, that's worse.
Couldn't even get kidnapped like a winner.
Damn. So what is Startup Panic? Tell us about this game.
So basically, at the beginning of the game, you choose your avatar out of a male or female avatar character, and immediately you quit your job and go to your bedroom where all the action is. What action am I talking about? Startup magic, because you and your new friend Clippy, I mean, whatever the hell they named him, decide to open up a startup company. And I did say Clippy as in the old Microsoft Word avatar, because they just threw him in there for some reason. And I find that to be very charming, because I miss Clippy. Everyone hated Clippy. I was not one of those people. Okay. So basically you are doing a startup, and the idea of what your startup is, well, the one thing I kind of found funny about this game is that you start up your company as just being a website. What does your website do? Whatever. Just do it. Because the idea behind this and the way your startup company works is that you are in a race to produce quote unquote features. What are features? Well, anything that can make things better for you. It starts out small. You create a web page. You create the ability to comment on posts. You create the ability to make posts. You create the ability to upload images. So on and so forth. And each of these features is considered like a task that you perform, where the game will tell you kind of like, this is what the task is. It will kind of give you a brief description of it, and even kind of give you some clues in that description as to what would go best to building it up. And what I mean by best is what stats, both on your employee or yourself, because you work as well, and are most effective for building up this product to be as best as it can be, as well as where to allocate stats. Because when you take on a job, after selecting the employee or employees to work the job, you have to select from a bunch of sliders being, aesthetics, usability, and technology. You have to move a slider in the amount of spaces and basically distribute it between those three different things with a certain total that you have out to use. Like, let's say you had a base value of 2, right? So you might say give aesthetics a 1, technology 0.5, and usability 0.5. And then you set the thing to run. You start working, time ticks down, and after a certain number of days, the job is done and you get rated on it, and you get a little a critic in the corner that gives you like a wordy review of like whether they thought your product was amazing, the best thing since sliced bread, or the worst thing since Star Wars. Because they get weird with some of the references in this game, and as you find the human people,
worst thing since Star Wars. Wow, that's a shot.
Yep. For those who are listening, Pernell personally doesn't like Star Wars, but that would have been my joke in the game. They have their own jokes.
They know, really, yeah.
So this ends up being what happened. Over time, you'll start getting more users to your site. Users generate revenue, because for each feature you add and the rating that you get for those features, because each one of those jobs, not only just it's not just succeed or fail, it's also how well you did and get an out of 10 rating. The more users you get and the better your features, the more money you earn for your company. And you need that money to offset the cost of things like office supplies, hiring employees, buying new offices entirely, because you eventually have to move on to different offices with increased rents and moving costs and stuff of that nature. And you'll basically be constantly, constantly, constantly concerned about money, because once you get past the early stages of building on features, it gets a little wild. Because you start hiring more employees, and each employee that you hire, which for the record, you can hire employees from multiple aspects of things. Like, you can get employees that were recommended to you by friends. So he's like, hey, I want some kids from the bar to just come work for me. But they're not particularly, they may not be the best employees because they're not particularly like trained. It's just, hey, I can help you with the project. So their stats are going to be kind of low, or they might have weird traits like gets lazy when more than one person's working with them on a project because they can mask their laziness. Or if their job doesn't go well, their motivation plummets because they don't have, they have low self-esteem and things of that nature. But there's also positive traits too, like is a real go-getter, so they'll work twice as fast to get something done and things like that. So you'll be hiring these kinds of people to get things done and managing their salaries and their motivations, because unlike any other job in the real world, unless you're like a CEO level type cat, you pay for your staff's vacations. So when the employee motivation gets to a certain level and you're concerned about them doing a good job, you send them on vacation and you pay for it. Vacations will increase a certain amount of motivation to get them back in their game, whether it be 10 points of motivation out of 100 or like 40 to 50 points of motivation out of 100. You'll be making this playing with this dance too. And you'd think that it would just be as simple as, okay, well, I got my people, I got my features, I'm just going to manage things and things will just work as I should. Well, that would be the case, except there's a lot of random events that pop up too, like the aforementioned hacking and kidnappings, which can adversely affect your job. Like, for example,
a kidnapping can adversely affect you? Tell me how.
Well, you see, a kidnapping of the wrong employee means that that employee no longer is able to do work for you. And that results in you needing to hire a new person, or I don't know.
It's probably not good for the employee either, Purnell.
Hey, hey, this is startup panic, not startup. I have a heart.
Startup heart. He got you.
So happy.
So once this actually occurs, you know, like these things happen, they negatively impact your business. So, give you an example. I'll state. So you got the hacking thing, right? I mentioned earlier how when you complete a feature, the game rates your status on it, and that determines how much money that feature can bring in. A hacker can come in and adversely hack into your website and damage one of your features, thereby bringing the rating way down. At this point, and also in points where you may feel as though you didn't do as good as you would have liked on something, you can actually go back and redo the job, possibly with better stats or with a better allocation of the three bars I mentioned to do a better job than before, and thereby repairing it and getting a better rating and thereby earning more money. And there's also other little bits too, like that you mentioned, like the idea that eventually once you get to a certain point on the growth tree, on the the features, your website starts to get the opportunity to diversify and spread out. So it becomes a question of, do you want to become like a YouTube site that features videos that people upload? Do you want to become a site that features video games that people can log in and play? Do you want to become a social media platform? Any of these things, all of them come with their own needs for different stats to build upon them, money to research them, because you got to research some things before you can even start working on them. Oh, you can also hire people to do espionage and steal ideas from other companies. It's kind of nifty how that works. But it's interesting in the fact that at the surface level, it's really no different from like any number of these other types of games where you go out and you do like, you know, build like, what's that company, Kairosoft, the one that does a bunch of stuff on like, they do a lot of games on Switch and on mobile. But outside of that, if you're already into this kind of stuff, you might be asking, okay, so is there something that makes this game stand out from those? And I think it actually is the writing and the events that occur, because there's, you feel more like, I mean, the main character is a personality. It's not just nameless guy. He talks to Clippy. There's dialogue that takes place. They get a little snippy with each other. He gets snippy with Clippy. I found myself chuckling at a number of the things that occurred in this game, like actually saying, hi, that's pretty funny. I like this. The reviews I would get back from the features that I produced, they were funny. I also forgot to mention one other thing, because this happens sometimes. When you complete a feature, that numeric rating doesn't just involve your money. The better your points are, the more trait points you get. You can earn either one or two trait points per task. And what those do is they allow you to buy, you know, nodes on a tech tree. There are three different levels of three different trees on the tech tree. And you can spend points to update those. And they give you various bonuses like a discount on office furniture or maybe, you know, shorten time and training sessions where you train your employees to do better with stats. or you go green. So as a result, your office costs are cheaper because you're recycling now. I don't know how that works. Maybe the building gives you a discount, whatever. Just go green anyway, because you damn well should. This environment is going to nuts. Anyway, so you'll be doing things like that to kind of, you know, update your, you know, work on your tech tree and make it so that your work environment is in the best shape possible with the most perks possible to, you know, basically just do the best you can with what you got. All in all, I found the game to be engaging and enjoyable. It wasn't, you know, groundbreaking for me or anything like that. In the sense, I'm saying that if this isn't your bag, this will not change your mind. But if you are the type who likes this kind of stuff and you're like, will this one make the cut or should I move on to the next thing? Because there are a number of games that do this. I would say this does belong higher up on the list. It's a good time to play. I did enjoy my time with it. And I've been away from this type of game for a little while. So it was nice to be able to come back in and go, you know, you still got it. I still got the moxie and I can still put out a mean job. And I personally, Tim, I do care when my employees get killed.
If you really cared, you would know that the character's name is James Snip, not Clippy.
No, I didn't. I didn't say that. I said I don't remember what his actual name is, but the character James Snip is a reference to Clippy, because they even outright say it in the game. He's like, "Hi, I'm James Snip," and he even references
you keep the saying new Microsoft Clippy. Avatar. The legal reasons you can't keep calling him Clippy.
I'm going to call him Clippy because we ain't getting sued. He even references like Cortana at one point, too.
Oh, God.
Cortana is the current Microsoft like name or whatever.
I was going to say, imagine Microsoft taking this podcast down.
Oh, my God. That'd be hilarious.
True. That being the...
But Joe, what are you going to do? I'm going to cry, baby.
Hang it up. It's been 9 years. Fuck it.
But, I think it's a good game. James Snip and all.
The game's $15. What's your official verdict?
I'd say it's a solid buy if you're a sim type. Try it if you're on the fence or haven't tried one before, because this will be a good one to sink your teeth into to get started.
Cool. Speaking of good games, next up we got a two-pack to talk about. I Love Finding Cats Collector's Edition and I Love Finding Pups Collector's Edition, both developed and published by Ocean Media. Cats released January 6th on the Switch for $9.99. Pups released January 20th on the Switch for
$9.99.
Whoa. I love Finding Cats is a classic hidden object game with great selection of mini games. Visit beautiful locations from across the globe while you find and collect adorable feline friends. And then the other one is visit beautiful locations from across the globe while you find and collect adorable canine companions. I Love Finding Pups features classic hidden object gameplay across a wide variety of scenes with a great collection of mini games sprinkled throughout. Brooke, you got cats. Chris, you got pups. Who wants to start?
Me, pick me.
All right, Brooke, tell us about your time with I Love Finding Cats Collector's Edition.
Oh, dude, well, it's like everybody always says about me. I love finding cats, man. I'm in the Twitch room right now. I already found at least one cat. It was to the lower left of Joe. So good. But yeah, longtime listeners may or may not recall, last week I discovered what I started calling slidey puzzles, and then I named them that. And even though that type of puzzle already has a name and isn't even remotely a new thing, just new to me, these listeners will be delighted to know that almost the same exact thing happened to me this week. although I'm at least familiar with the concept of hidden object games, I'd never played one before. I also just assumed that they were just hella easy. And maybe they are. But if that's the case, I'm really, really bad at finding the hidden object. Like, maybe Chris, I don't know. Dude, it's probably the cats. Now, Chris, my times are not good. I wanted us to have like a showdown. Now maybe I'm embarrassed. It's pretty bad. But I did play a fair amount of it. What you need to know, first and foremost, is if this game is even remotely on your... Here? Whoa, get those stats. You can look at them for each level. We'll talk about this later.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, it's actually not just a hidden object finding game. As you begin your journey in the universe of I Love Finding Cats, you will be whisked off, as Joe said, to exotic locations around the world, such as Tuscany, Amsterdam, Shropshire, Idaho, Bavaria, Tyrol, and Minnesota. That's almost all of them. Each place in the world you visit, you'll be presented with three challenges, just like in real life. The first trial will be Find the Thing, which is what I've renamed Find the Hidden Object puzzles for this week. The second challenge, you will compare two pictures of roughly the same thing and find all the differences between them. your third challenge for each location. Chris, I don't know how to put this. It's not like a jigsaw puzzle, but like it's like a picture broken into pieces, it's scrambled up.
Well,
jigsaw without the jigsaw pattern, it's like primary shapes.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know how much our games differ, but there's totally a jigsaw puzzle in the Pups game. What? I'm playing it right now.
Oh my god! So what's the difference between, how do y'all define jigsaw? Let's just split off here for a second. I define jigsaw like I think of the actual jigsaw where you kind of push it through on the blade, and then the classic puzzles would have like actual locking pieces. These are kind of like pieces. Yeah, so like I wonder, Chris, if are yours more jigsaw like locking pieces, or are there pieces that you slide around?
No, you don't slide them around in this one. You actually select one and then select where it goes. But the thing is, instead of the classic jigsaw shape, which, by the way, I have a fun fact about that pretty soon. But instead of the classic like jigsaw shapes.
Oh, I love jigsaw puzzles.
They're all like shaped basically like cacti, and then you just kind of have to go by like the context of the little picture inside to like know where to put them.
Okay.
Is different.
All right, I got to see some screenshots. We got to connect on this after the show.
Yeah.
So, okay, let me get back on track here. As you sail the seven seas on your journey looking for things, cats, and differences between two photos, you'll also be accumulating adopt points for every cat you find in the hidden object and the difference between two pictures puzzles. Because the cats you find aren't actually counted towards your hidden objects that you find per puzzle, they're just a little extra. So the big surprise of this game is you don't even have to find any cats in the game. That's totally optional. You can split that part. You can skip that part entirely if you want. But look at you, Tim. I mean, you love finding cats. And now they got you right where they want you, finding cats for free. No, just kidding.
You're just kidding. Paying for
it. It's not for free. They pay you an imaginary $1 per cat you find. The adopt points I mentioned earlier, you get one of those for each cat you find. Those points each become $1 in your My Cat screen, where you can purchase new cats to unlock. From a screen that says above the top, pick a cat to join you on your travels. There's like 20 of them to collect with adopt points, ranging from $5 to $18. I haven't bought the $18 cat yet, but I'm really close. I'm probably going to get there during the show, so stay tuned. I'll let you know what that guy looks like, because I got to know.
Beautiful, I bet. Hi, punch.
Okay, well, the good news is you don't have to... long story short, if you like highlights in the magazine and you love finding cats, this is the game for you.
Did you just reference highlights for children?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's totally highlights for children.
I used to love that magazine.
That actually like kind of sells me on the game, highlights for like, I miss highlights for kids. That shit was awesome.
It really was. Game. It's got some similar junk going on.
God, I could.
Where's highlights for middle-aged adults? Damn it!
Seriously. Yeah.
No, that's more like it.
Speaking of similarities, the store page for the two games is fairly similar bullet points. The first one is 6 extra locations, find even more cats, while the other page says 6 extra locations, find even more cats. Yes, yeah. They both say cats.
They both say cats.
Awesome.
The rest are identical, except for swapping out cats and pups, like additional adoptable cats, and meet the developers' adorable cats and pups.
Indeed.
Tell me about meeting the developers' cats and pups.
One of them has, like, hang on, I gotta get out of this puzzle. But one of them has a doggy named Bacon.
Oh, yes. Ooh. Awesome. I wonder if those are the dogs that I'm seeing in my puzzles, because I'm seeing like maybe one dog per puzzle. I figured out pretty quickly we must not have like repeats of animals, but I wonder if the ones that I'm seeing in my game are like Easter eggs and one of them's Bacon. I gotta know.
Hang on, I'm gonna pull up Bacon right now. I actually got a screenshot of the puzzle on Twitter, by the way. Hang on, let me.
Oh, cool.
I'll post that in the chat.
Every time I saw a dog, I took a screenshot for you so I could be like, is this in your game, man? Is this one of your...
Doc Havoc in chat is very intrigued. What's this about a dog named Bacon?
Hang on.
Yeah, this is a totally different puzzle than what I had. Like, this is kind of jigsaw-y to me. This is nuts.
This is nuts. Insanity.
I'm just surprised our games are that different. I'm actually kind of impressed.
They are unique. Unique. Chris, tell us more about the pup side of things. What goes on over there?
Okay, hang on. I'm taking a screenshot of Bacon. This is very important.
Thank you.
less litter boxes, more walks per day.
Okay, so say what? What'd you say?
I said less litter boxes, more walks per day. I'm sure.
Just less town differences.
Yeah, true. Yeah, so that's actually a point that I do want to make at some point. So I have what is it called? I love finding pups. Here's the thing, though, about finding cats versus finding pups. You do have to find cats, but if a pup likes you, you don't have to find a pup. The pup will find you.
He's covered
with you. Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? I feel like my game might have a little more of a sinister twist. So I named my player Murderer. and now I'm finding pups in these different locations where they are hiding from me. the photos are really cool. They but here's the thing about it is that, you know, you are expecting like a totally pup filled adventure, but really per puzzle so far I've had to find a total of 4 pups and 14 other not pups type of things. And it's like, it's kind of wild stuff sometimes. In the last level I had to find a skull.
The skull of a former pup?
No, it was a human skull. It was wedged up into it was wedged up in a yeah, exactly, thank you. It was wedged up in a trashy, like, abandoned van's like tire, like, housing kind of thing, whatever you call that. Also I kept my Google search results open for things that they asked me to find that I didn't know what they actually were looking for. One is a bobble. And I was like, I had no idea that a bobble is the word for one of those like Christmas tree ornaments. It's just like a plain, like, colored ball. That's literally called a bobble. I always thought it was just a catch-all phrase for like small things.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and so I had to find that. And then Egyptian column, which I had to find in a window in a warehouse. And then sextant, which turns out to not be as fun as it sounds.
Oh,
it's, I know.
Well, isn't that something for like navigation?
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's that little telescope with the wing underneath. Like, it looks like a telescope mixed with a protractor for nerds on the high seas.
Nerd!
But nerd. It's roughly dog centric, but yeah, it's mostly like, you know, finding stuff in puzzle, and it's really good. Like, you actually will pour over this one. The thing that kind of bothered me about it is that there's 2 different ways to zoom in on the puzzles. One is to push the R button, the shoulder, you know, R, not the trigger, the bumper, to zoom in on the whole picture, and you can scroll around, right? And then there's a separate command where it brings up a magnifying glass so that you can zoom in on one thing about twice as good as just the first zoom. And you can even combine the two, but here's the problem. If you use one or the other, then you can move the little magnifying glass around, or you can move the whole picture around to like try and find stuff better. But if you zoom in on something once to scroll the picture and then use the magnifying glass, it sits in a predetermined location where you last had the cursor. So, and you can't move it from there. So it's like kind of broken that way. You kind of have to put the cursor in the middle, then zoom in, then activate the magnifying glass for, you know, super specific sextant finding action. And yeah, like Brooke, I also got pupper points, and I want to brag on myself a little bit here, because, you know, they show all of the dogs except for your initial dog, because this game isn't going to kick you out there without one dog. So you get a default doggy, and then all the rest of the dogs are represented in silhouettes and the amount of puppy points that it costs to unlock them. And just based on the silhouette, without even a blink, like, I looked at all these silhouettes of dogs and found the pug immediately, which is my favorite breed, by the way.
Nice. Did you share a picture of Bacon yet?
I did. It's on Twitter, I think. Hang on, let me get it here.
Just shared it out to the internet any way that was possible. Wasn't
the only link I saw in chat was the puzzle one.
Yeah, hang on.
We need the picture of Bacon for the image episode, Bacon, obviously.
Dude. Bacon, there you go. One order of bacon.
He's really cute.
Aww.
Yeah, you can even see from the screenshot that, like, for a hidden object game, even though I haven't technically played one before. It looks pretty premium. Like, it's just got some nice buttons and features. It's more than I expected with this type of game, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's $10 each. What are your thoughts on the games?
Ooh, I guess it's just going to depend on which animal you like more. Unless you're... unless you're, you know, a rich tycoon.
Well, I think this is worth $10 if somebody wants to play like a finding object plus other highlights-esque puzzles. This is probably one of the nicer ones out there. I didn't have exactly the problem that you have with the cursor, but I kind of had some issues with the game itself as well. A couple of the items were just buggy on me. I really wanted to pride myself on never taking any of the hints, but there were a couple items, and I mean, maybe like 10 puzzles I did that I selected over and over and over again. It wouldn't let me select, so I'm like, okay, I guess this isn't the thing it says it is. And then the hint was like, it's right here, you fucking idiot. And I'm like, that's what I clicked. And I clicked it like a million times, zoomed in and out. I just had a couple things that happened like that. I also thought there were a couple, like, what do I even call it? Maybe it's suffering from poor localization as well for this country's release. Like, I had a puzzle with, they want me to find the necktie. And in the photo is a necktie, and on the other side of the photo is a bow tie. Now, those are technically both neckties, but I clicked the necktie, it didn't count, and I clicked the bow tie, it counted as necktie. So it's like, yeah, that's not game-breaking, but it is confusing. And it's,
you know, I had that exact problem because they asked me to find a paddle, and I was like, okay, I was looking for a ping-pong paddle, but then I was like, oh, they mean an oar. And so I looked for an oar and found it.
Yeah, lots of stuff like
not
that.
Find you the right oar. That's a paddling.
Paddle. That's one to merit. Yeah, just little stuff like that happened to me. I don't know if you ever got the, what was it called? Baja? But they're like, oh, find the duck. And it's like, dude, that's a goose, my man. That is not a duck. I wouldn't know.
So this is not a... This is not a game for bird lovers, then.
Yeah. Not a game for...
This is going home.
Pernell, well, out.
If I may, I'm just going to paraphrase myself from earlier today and say that, you know, it's a great game if you love finding dogs, and it's a great game if you love finding cats, you know, respectively. But if you love finding both, then you obviously work for the pound, and you'll never find our dogs and cats.
Curses! You found us out!
Brooke, any final comments on I Love Finding Cats?
Yeah, I mean, if you like hidden object, this is the cream of the crop.
Cool. All right. Moving on, next game to talk about is GunTech 2, developed by Janny Pattinson, or Pettinen. I'm so sorry, I butchered your name. I can't do it. Published by Utopus Games, released January 13th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $19.99. GunTech 2 is an ultimate retro-style shoot-em-up based in space. Some would call it a K-Flyer. Whatever you call it, one thing for sure, the game is packed with... full of nonstop action, loads of weapons, and big explosions. Tim, tell us about GunTech 2.
Hang on, that was just Twitch chatting. Somebody mentioned Chorus. Anyways, yeah, what's really weird is like it's not gonna change anything because I was feeling kind of mild on this game, and then I was reading up a bit of stuff about how the developer had a not mild case of COVID last month and was in the hospital for like 8 days.
Oh shit.
Yeah. And like, right as he was going in, he found like his game got rejected. Like, this game got rejected for cert because Microsoft wanted to put loading bars on the loading screens. And so he's having like fucking fever dreams about the game never coming out or being a disaster while he's in like the hospital with COVID.
That's insane.
It is insane.
And I can't say their name right. Yay.
Yeah,
but at least the game came out.
He is no longer in the hospital, and the game came out, so he's okay. So I can talk about what a piece of shit. No. Okay, so this game also, speaking of games that are apparently sequels to things that came out 30 years ago, this came out. There was a game called Utopos that was later renamed GunTech. That is GunTech 1 that came out in 1992 on the Atari ST. Everybody remembers that GunTech, right?
Oh, yeah.
I loved GunTech so much. And, you know, went pew pew in the room.
That's why it's such a funny thing when you see Gun Tech 2. You're like, oh, yeah, sure. This was probably a game that came out recently, right? No, turns out no. Yeah, so what this is a, you know, sort of overhead, like, twin stick, basically, shootery type game. Where it's not really a bullet hack type deal. The game's broken down into stages, and it's about being able to navigate them. You have your blaster to shoot off some enemies. You have special weapons that you pick up that could be activated with like one of the bumpers. And yeah, each level will have like different clear requirements. Which is mostly just either kill a bunch of things and then go to the exit, or make your way to the exit. Sometimes some are pretty straightforward. Some are a little more open, and you kind of got to poke around to find your way through, a little more maze like. The thing that I don't like about the game is the control of the ship, and this is a personal taste thing, where it's not like a twin stick shooter where it's like, okay, your ship does not change direction instantly. It has thrust and momentum.
One of those.
So, you know,
like think the original of like, asteroids where like once you're going in a certain direction. Yep.
Yes. You thrust, your ship moves in that direction. And then when you need, there's say something that causes you to need to hastily turn in another direction, like you could press in that other direction, but your ship's momentum is going to slowly slow down and then go the other way. And, you know, when you need to start moving your ship, it takes a second to start moving. It has to build up some momentum before it goes. And you might be saying to yourself, like, well, that doesn't sound so bad. You know, it's like gravity. It's the way things work in space. Well, it might be the way things work in space, but that doesn't mean that it's fun for a video game of this nature. Because when you have like lasers that are turning on and off, and you have to specifically time when you need to engage the thrust on your ship so that you pass through it without, you know, having your ship being bathed in lasers because you timed it just a little bit wrong because it's a momentum slight shift up. That's not a ton of fun for me. The game also, you have a health bar, and you also take damage when you bash into things like walls and whatnot. So, you know, that's what killed me more than anything in this game, not enemies or, you know, hazards. It was just like me bing bonging around into walls and such. And it's not like a complete disaster. It's not my preference, but it's pretty strongly not my preference. So it made the game tough to enjoy for me. That like kind of control issues aside, it is a pretty nice looking, simple, straightforward, just kind of overhead shooter game. It has like five different worlds, excluding the tutorial world. What's really funny, like once you get past the tutorial, you get to see the progression. And there's a World Zero, which is a holiday themed level, which I was like, oh, it's because the game was supposed to come out in December. And now I know it's like, oh, it's because he had the one thing that didn't pass cert and he was in the hospital with COVID. So it didn't come out in December with this holiday themed level to enjoy. But yeah, there's like four or five kind of themed worlds, though. Like a large theme of the game, ironically, is viruses. Like the first or second main world is like full of like these giant beakers that are spewing out viruses that look like fucking COVID out of them. Which is intentional and, you know, hilarious because of what happened to the developer. You gotta like you're shooting viruses that can latch onto your ship and drain your energy. That's on point right now with the grand situation. But either way, you know, you play through these levels. There's coins to pick up. So you earn currency that you can use to unlock more weapons. You can use the currency to unlock more ships. Though right there on the ship unlock screen, it's like, well, you could pay this much for this ship, or you'll just get it after you beat this level. So it's like, okay, well, I can wait, and I'll spend my money on weapons that, you know, don't have indicators that they're going to unlock a couple levels down the line. Though that I don't know, I didn't. There's like a lot of special weapons, but like I didn't really, you know, the game's not super long. I mean, it's meant for some replayability, I guess, as a shooter to go through and try out with different weapons and power ups and such. But they didn't feel super impactful for me. But yeah, the really what it comes down to it is the game is fine. It's not exceptional. It's not a disaster. It's not my cup of tea because of how the ship controls.
Do you think if you changed how the ship controls that it would, like, is it possible in a game like this to completely overhaul how the ship moves?
I mean, yeah, I'm not a fucking game developer, so yeah, sure, it's probably easy.
I just don't know how easy it would be to implement in something like this.
I don't know if it's easy to or not. I mean, it would be, I don't know if that would like make it a go-to shooter for me even besides that. But yeah, it's fine. It's fine if you're looking for something to dabble around in. It would be a try it on my scale of reviewing. But especially for, I don't know, maybe if it was, you caught it on sale, but I don't know, the dude was just in the hospital and his insurance didn't cover an O2 tank to have at his house. So maybe he needs money.
Damn.
I know. I
read this going hard.
There's an article on Wired about it. And it just like, maybe I'm just cool. Like, oh God.
So out of guilt, that's a buy it.
I know. But
cold-blooded. Well, if it gets the guy some sales, it's worth it.
Yeah, maybe help the guy out. I don't know, but yeah, it's a game. It's fine. Yeah.
Well, check it out. It's available on Xbox One and Series X and S. So there you go. Tim, that is it for you.
Coming to other platforms, he says he's going
to
work.
Tim's coming to other platforms soon.
But not past 7 p.m. PST. Yes. He's in bed then.
Oh, my God, yeah. But, well, it's my kid woke up in the middle of the night with a nosebleed. This is a thing that happens every now and then. It's not like out of and I mentioned this to other people and I'm like, oh yeah, he's got some nosebleeds. It's like, oh yeah, you know, that, you know, used to happen to my kids, or they know somebody that gets it. And it's just like, sometimes you go and wake that kid up and it looks like a fucking homicide scene in his bed.
Like, wait, slow down. Wake him up. That junk woke me up because it's like you're drowning in your own blood.
Yeah, usually he wakes up under his own power. But like, So it's like,
yeah, nosebleeds are always fun. Those are always a good time.
One in the morning, it's like he sounded stuffy, and you know, I'm half awake. I'm not ready to take care of a child. And I was like, oh, just go get a tissue. And then he's like, Dad, I'm bleeding. And I'm like, oh God. So I got to go. And by that point, he's got like, cause he's half awake too. So he's got like blood on his hands. He's got blood on his feet. There's like blood drops on the floor downstairs. I got to like get him cleaned up, get the bleeding to stop, like make sure like, okay, is it done? Are we okay? Yeah. Check his sheets. It didn't go on his sheets or anything, then get him back to bed. And then once I get him back to bed, then I can't fall asleep.
And then you get a nosebleed and
yeah, then I get a nosebleed. So no, then
he
I, then
to
I, then I
walk st- you to the bathroom, make sure your face clean.
Then I stare at the day's Wordle until I feel sleepy. And
what the hell is Wordle? I keep hearing about that.
Yeah, just go. It's a website with just like a simple little word game every day. It's fun. I like it. Buy it. You don't have to, though, because it's free. But then when my child woke up, he apparently had another nosebleed, and that did get blood on his pillow. So that had to go into the wash.
Wash, nice.
But into the wash.
So, yeah. You were like, love it.
I was going to say, yeah, I feel seen now.
Same.
My beauty sleep was disrupted by a bleeding out child, so that's why I need my nap naps.
And now I feel so bad for what I did to my parents for years. Now, it's just me. It's like, well, no one to see my bloody shame.
Just get red sheets. You're an adult now.
Oh, God. See, Brooke is the idea woman. She knows what's up.
All right, Tim, any final words?
No, nothing. Nope. Yeah, I'm going to finish reading the Twitch chat and then I'm going to go to bed.
Cool. Right. Have a good one.
Night.
The Twitch periodical.
God. Next game to talk about is Labyrinth Legend, developed by Regista, published by NIS America, released January 18th on the Switch for $14.99. Just under the surface of the Kingdom of Kanata lies an enigmatic labyrinth that guards treasures untold. Who but you dares to venture into its limitless dungeons where beasts and secrets abound? Chris, tell us about Labyrinth Legend.
Who but you indeed. Also, Kanata, is it not Canada?
I maybe.
The Lost Ruins of Canada. I'd play that.
Canada.
Exactly. Oh, okay.
Kingdom of Canada. Maybe.
Canada. Okay.
I thought it was Katana at first. I'm like, no, that the N and the T are in different places.
My head is Canada now. We can't go back.
All right, so
no,
Canadians.
Actually, Aki has a great point. She asks if this is the big booby game. This is not, but I thought it was going to be as well.
Wait, what?
That is Labyrinth Life Omega, or Omega Labyrinth Life, or something like
that. That game is great, by the way.
Yeah, it's maybe too much for me. I don't know. But I haven't picked it up yet. No, this game is entirely, as far as I can tell, boobless. I'm sorry. Aki can just mute the thing now. Anywho,
he's checked out hours ago.
Yeah, exactly. No, what this is this is a top-down roguelike adventure game with hacky and slashy elements. But yeah, it's basically where you are a person who kind of, you know, you can actually choose from different people, approximate creatures as well, but you basically choose your kind of avatar. And you go into, you know, you start off in a hub town. It's like everybody's seen this before. You have your loadout of weapons. You go to the local dungeon, which changes every time you go into it, and then all this other stuff. So it's like that, but it's basically, like I said, it's a little bit more of a hack and slash type of thing. What you're trying to go for is you're trying to clear 5 levels in a particular stage and then beat a boss in order to have that stage cleared and you can move on to the next. So it's a little more episodic that way. One of my favorite styles of roguelike is the mystery dungeon style, which was also done really well by a game called Izuna, Legend of the Unemployed Ninja, which, by the way, is a big booby game. So there you go. But yeah,
it's all about the boobies.
I guess it's one of my favorite DS games. But anyway, it's like it's roguelike, but it also is like shorter levels that you can actually get through. But this game, yeah, it really piles on the forgiveness in terms of like what it allows you to do. For instance, anytime you want to, you can leave the dungeon and go back to the town. You just have to start the dungeon over. You maintain your level. And yeah, like especially, you know, if you're trying to get money and stuff to improve your weapons and, you know, everything else, then you probably will leave the dungeon a few times, not because you've been overwhelmed by enemies, but because you've been overwhelmed by inventory, because you have a very limited inventory space initially. And you basically go to the, the make your life better kind of stand and pay to have your inventory made better. I'm sorry, I heard something. Oh,
I don't know.
Okay. So, yeah.
We'll blame Brooke.
Yeah, it's probably me, you guys.
Gotcha. All right. No problem.
The ghosts.
I wish this podcast was haunted. That would be great. Someone is listening. Anyways.
It's
so, yeah. You
boo it.
Oh. Okay, so I've totally lost my place.
So,
now.
Labyrinth Legend.
Yeah, Labyrinth Legend. It's you go in and like I said, you try to get enemies to drop the best gear. Sometimes you can run into what's called like an epic enemy, which is like a mini boss, and they might drop some like really awesome stuff too. It's all rated in a star system, so if you get like a 5-star rarity type thing, then that's really awesome. Everything else you're going to want to sell or drop in the dungeon. You also have a few different currencies here. You know, your money, which is used to improve your life and purchase other items. Mostly, though, the stuff you find in the dungeons is way better than what's in the shop, as per the law of hack and slash. But then there's also magic points that you get for defeating enemies, and those can be spent on everything from purchasing the material you need to get better, like to upgrade your equipment, you know, slowly but surely. Also, it can be used to hire somebody to dig in the you hire somebody to dig in the mine for those better materials. You also can spend it in the dungeon to get super rare items that are behind like a locked gate that'll cost like 400 magic points kind of thing, which those are usually your 4 and 5 star rarity type things. And you can actually travel to Monster Island, where you can adopt a cute little monster to follow you around in the dungeon, and also awards you bonuses, which is kind of cool. I have a bird that helps get me more money. So, yeah, it's a really well thought out. I wish I had a bird
that gave me money.
Right, same. but it'd be like the reverse experience of a crow. I guess crows would bring you shiny things, wouldn't they? But anyways, yeah, so this is a pretty cool little romp. It's nice and colorful and, you know, 2D without being, like, really blocky or anything. It's by NIS, and I don't know, NIS America always seem to have, like, these great games that have just a... They're just addicting enough that you just keep coming back to them. So all around, I was really impressed with this one. It's not the, you know, most, it's no Diablo 4 or whatever, but I mean, this one will have you coming back for more, for sure.
Nice. Well, it's only $15, which is pretty cheap for a NIS game. So what do you think?
Yeah, I'd say go ahead and buy it. It's really good. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to complain about on it. It's also multiplayer, so you can actually tackle dungeons together. It does have a whole extra game that is a true roguelike, in that you will start the dungeon over in level 1 and et cetera, et cetera. It's more, you know, challenging and stuff. And they recommend you play it after you play through the storyline. But yeah, it's got a lot going for it, and I say well worth the $15.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
All right, next up is Jack in Hat phrasing. Developed by Cross Game Studio, published by two awesome partners, released January 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S for $7.99. The sinister Dr. Voo Doom has kidnapped the Princess of Ririland and incited a civil war. It's up to Repairman Extraordinaire Jack and his boomerang hat to save her and restore peace. Jump through 20-plus huge levels, collecting crystal stars and more. Can you save Ririland? Purnell, tell us about Jack in Hat.
I just keep wanting to go Ririland, but so the idea about this game is like you describe. I think it's kind of funny how the guy kidnaps the princess, like, I'm taking over everything, and then the scientist is like, we have a way to get to him. He's on the moon, but we need someone that can do it. And the scientist just goes, I know who can do it. He just pulls out a Mr. Fix-It pamphlet. Like, Jack is the jack of all trades. He could do it. What makes you think he can? Well. I called him to fix like some of my plumbing, and he converted the entire room to like a really nice den. He's worth it. Like, wow. If that's all it took to save the world, sign me up. Oh shit. Especially if it gets me a neat boomerang hat in the deal. Because the boomerang hat came from the professor. The idea behind this game is that once Jack is enlisted by the professor, he has to explore various areas within the Ririland Kingdom. To find these power crystals, which are used to power the device that will get him to Dr. Voodoo's base on the moon. And those crystals are hidden within 20 levels, as mentioned earlier. And they're actually fairly lengthy stages. They are 2D side-scroller levels, where the idea is that Jack has to go through them and eventually find the energy crystal hidden within it and then exit. It's interesting that I think about this in the it feels like a weird cross between like a 2D Crash Bandicoot and a 2D Donkey Kong Country, in the sense of like you're going around and there are a bunch of crates hidden throughout, they're just around the levels. And when you smash them, they contain little gems.
That was me, you guys. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I was just more like, what the hell is
we're just going to mute till Purnell's review is over.
I just don't know what that was. I'm like,
what are you watching?
Yeah, we want details.
I tried to open Facebook like a jabroni, and a video started playing. I mean, it scared the shit out of me. I hate the future. I can't even be on TikTok. They just start playing videos. I'm like, I just got here. You guys... Anyway, sorry about that.
Okay. Dude, big same on that.
That's why you mute your phone before you start the show. And
so I just laugh at the idea that that was like a hilarious sound. But so you're going through these levels, and like I said, you have to find the energy crystal, and then also find the exit, which is at the end of the stage. But during the exploration of the level, You will also come across a bunch of crates. And when you smash these crates, you might find either gems, which do the typical find 100 gems, get a one-up mechanic, or you could find actual one-ups, so they're much more rare to find. And then lastly, at least from what I've noticed, you could also find like little medicine bottles where if you pick it up and they hit the left bumper button, you can heal one of your three hearts that keep you from dying. But the thing is, at the end of the level, you know, I mentioned the Crash Bandicoot thing, they have a marker that tells you how many crates are on the level and a threshold of those crates you need to smash. And if you smash that threshold of crates, you earn a bonus energy gem, which pretty much is how you end up getting some of the bonus levels in the game, from what I could tell.
You gotta smash all the crates. Like, I got to the end of the one stage and it was like 108 out of 110, and I couldn't go back to break anymore because there was a cliff that was just high enough I couldn't jump back over. And I was just, son of a bitch. Two?
And they get you too, because like early on they're kind of like generous with it. Like, I think the first two or three levels was like 100 and like a bash 100 crates out of like 130. It's like, big deal. But then it's like you mentioned later on, they're like, you gotta hit every crate on the stage. Like, there's no room for missing. And in some levels, you can't even get the crates in one go. You have to come back later. But the other thing, as far as levels are concerned, that you can collect is like, and this is where the Donkey Kong Country reference comes in. There are letters hidden on the levels that spell Jack. And if you find all four of those, you'll get a I want to say that's where you get the stars from. And stars are also meant to unlock things later in the game if you get enough of them. So enemies in the game are pretty much like, I'm going to lay it out right now on the table. The enemies in this game are kind of meh. Like, you're talking little dots that run around, or a rectangular green dude who fires a gun. Like, they didn't really inspire me to care one way or the other. But that doesn't really hurt the game as a whole, because I did find the platforming to be fairly fun. And some of the sections are pretty tough. Like, there are a couple areas where they expect you to nail a jump perfectly just to get across the pitfall, get across the pit or whatever. And there's one particular level later on in the game that is one of those like chase levels where you're getting chased by a giant boulder. And yeah, you're going to lose some lives there because they hit you with some crap where you have to be very precise in what you're doing to succeed. But I was finding myself having fun with the game. And early on, I was like, okay, well, I'm kind of feeling kind of weird here. Like, there's no abilities that you can gain. There's no power-ups or fine or whatever like that. But when you beat a boss, which usually shows up every four stages, you get a new ability, which is tacked onto Jack's, you know, move registry. And then you can use that ability in some cases to either go back to old levels to get letters that you could, or crates you couldn't get the first time because they were intentionally gated off by that ability. Or they just make the future platforming levels that much tougher. Like, the first boss gives you a slide ability, and that rock level that I mentioned before immediately requires you to use that slide. Like, you have to use it there. You don't, you're going to die. And I'm okay with that. I like when games give you abilities and say you need to actually put them to use. They're not just for flavor text. They work. You need them. So I honestly found myself enjoying the game. The music is pretty good. The levels are pretty good. I just wish the enemies were better. But all in all, especially for the price that it is, it's not a bad romp. It's like, again, 20 levels, and the levels themselves are fairly lengthy too. They're not short. So I think you're getting decent platformer bang for your buck for the scratch. What did you think? You said you were playing it too, right?
Yeah, it's an enjoyable game. Some of the boxes and letters are going to take a little bit to find, with like branching paths and just open the levels are a lot larger than I expected them to be.
Oh, I forgot we should both mention this. One thing that they did about the game that's pretty nifty for those who would need it is they broke it off into two. I don't know why they called them modes, but they broke them off into two modes. There is a modern mode and a retro mode.
Retro. Let me guess, mode you played requires, retro.
Of course, I want some stakes in the game. Retro mode gives you lives, where if you run out of lives, it's a game over, essentially. Or rather, you go back to your last save file or whatever. And modern mode is infinite lives, so you can try as many times as you need to get the job done. I'm the type of guy where I feel like, in some respects, I mean, I just kind of feel like I need those stakes. I want to feel like there's something at stake if I screw up. Now, I can see if this game was like built to be really tough, at which case now it's just becoming really frustrating and the death requires the whole level to start over, because sometimes that's a time thing. But for me, I'm like, I feel like they give you enough that I can handle it. Now, that rock level that I mentioned, it ate some lives, but I got them back, so it wasn't a big thing.
Well, the game's $8. What's your verdict?
I'd say it's a buy. It's a good time. I only rest for the developers that are listening. Maybe a little bit more enemies. If it's not a matter of doing the graphical design of the enemies, then maybe just a little bit more enemy diversity across the worlds.
Cool. Works for me. All right. Up next is Dungeons of Shalnor, developed and published by Johnny Ostad, released January 21st on the Switch for $9.99. Dungeons of Shalnor is a tactical roguelike game. It features turn-based combat along with a turn-the-camera mechanic that also turns all monsters and projectiles, causing interesting outcomes such as monsters walking into traps or attacking one another. Chris, tell us about your time with Dungeons of Shalnor.
Okay, well, this is not to be confused with Shalnor Legends, which I reviewed years ago, which is by the same person slash publisher. So whereas that was a kind of cheap but sincere Zelda game, this is a more unusual take on the roguelike genre, of which, you know, we already discussed one today. But unlike that one, which is hack and slash and all, you know, free roaming, slashing things with your sword, collecting items and stuff, where you can be, you know, any kind of choose from a list of avatars to like play through. In this one, you are one depressed guy called Mervin. So basically what it is that, you're dead or something, and you got to go through dungeons and die many times. Like they tell you the death-like character at the beginning of the hub is like, yes, we encourage you to die as much as you can, which is no joke. They bring you back to life and keep you sending you into this dungeon where your eye patch wearing guy has to basically go through, again, five levels and a boss in order to clear like a certain thing. And all along the way, you're collecting coins, which are basically, upon death, traded for ghost coins, which, you get like one ghost coin for, let's say, every 200 gold pieces or something like that. And those ghost coins are what you can use to buy permanent upgrades. And yikes, it is very, very hard to get them. So this is the kind of roguelike where you move one laborious square at a time. And when you move, every enemy on the map moves. And enemies will do exactly predictable things. And the thing about this game is that, so it's all about manipulating like the room and the enemies to like not kill you, because initially two hits and you're dead. So you really can't get hit in this game. And there's all the other traps such as spikes on the floor and things like that, but they hurt you and the enemy. So, you know, those can both be used strategically as well as very much avoided as such. So the thing that they were talking about with the rotating the screen is that you can rotate the entire map, which will change your position. It also costs a turn. Every time you take a step, it takes a turn. Every time you turn around horizontally, it takes a turn. And again, this is what's going to cause enemies to maybe close the gap and attack you. So you really have to plan this out. When you go vertical, or when you flip the map around, it actually does change the way certain things relate to each other, because everybody's, you know, nobody has a side profile, right? So you're always facing left or right. So if you turn the map, now suddenly you're facing left or right, but traveling in a different direction. It's hard to describe, but basically it's just this different way for the game to kill you unfairly at every turn. Like, that's the whole point of this game, is death very often. For the most part, you're going to spend most of your time just trying to gather up enough coins before you die to get just one more ghost coin. And six of those things, you could have another point of health, which will help you to finally, hundreds of turns later, get through maybe the first level or two. And like, it's not even a thing you can sneak past, because as you go, you know, there's different little sections to the levels with a little arrow, like kind of, it looks like they're scotch taped to the ground, which is a funny thing for me. But they keep you from making progress. So you have to clear everything else that's on the stage, including it's everything from like having to clear the space of enemies to having to push a button on the floor. And, you know, that's what's going to get you to go to the next section. So, you know, you really, it's a slow, ponderous kind of roguelike. And it is unforgiving. Like I said, you only get a ghost coin upon death if you got enough coins. There's no levels. There's no, like, you know, items to pick up or lose. In the currency, I don't even know what the regular gold does besides buy ghost coins. There are power-ups you can pick up in the stages that do help you out somewhat. And again, there is permanent loadout if you can manage to purchase some. But apart from that, yeah, it's very much a thinking man's like roguelike. This is a one false move and you're doomed kind of thing. So in that sense, it can also be pretty addicting. But yeah, it's very much
it'll kick your ass.
This is for the people who like to get their asses kicked by this sort of game.
Nice. Well, it's $10. What are your thoughts?
$10. I mean, it's made pretty lovingly. Definitely something like, you know, well, it's only through the fates that I've been given two roguelikes in the same week to review. But I will say I definitely prefer the experience of something like Labyrinth Legend to Dungeons of Shalnor. But again, it, like I said with Shalnor Legends, it's very sincere. This person knows how to make a game and, you know, they're doing a good job with it. So I'd say as long as the absolute punishing detail of the game isn't something that's going to chase you off, then yeah, this is worth a bit of your brain power for sure.
Rock on. All right, yeah. We got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Kind Duo, developed by Nib Games, published by Rattleika Games, released January 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Kind Duo is a game where two elemental friends overcome obstacles to return to their island, push boxes, use electricity to connect objects, break ice blocks, blow things up, and more in this cute and colorful game. Purnell, tell us about your time with it.
I think it's funny it says and more. I'm like, no, I think you literally named all the things you can do.
Yeah.
But I digress. So the premise is like Joe described. A lightning bolt kid and a rock kid are trying to get home. And this is done by traversing 30 stages, getting to the two titular characters to access the exit door on the level and get out. How is this done? Well, each level is a series of platforms and objects. And you need to use both characters together to get them equally to the gate. I guess I don't think they don't mention their names per se. So I'm just going to call them like, you know, Lightning Kid and Rock Kid. Lightning Kid can do a few things. He can jump higher and he can electrify things. And he also gets an air dash later on. Basically, they don't start you with all their abilities. They kind of parse them out as you progress through the game. But that's what the Lightning Kid does. Rock Kid. He has a crappy jump, so he doesn't jump very high, but he can push objects, and he eventually gets a ground pound ability to smash through like ice floors pretty much ice floors. So what ends up happening is like you might see a room, for example, where there's like a platform that Rock Kid can't reach, but Lightning Kid can, and on that platform there's also a electric block that, when electrified, will allow elevator to move up and down. Lightning Kid can get to that platform, electrify the block to send the elevator down to Block Kid. Block Kid gets on it and he gets brought up by the elevator when he gets re-electrified. That's kind of the element of how this game operates to get through levels. And as bit by bit goes on, they introduce a few more things like TNT blocks, which can be detonated by getting electrified. And I mentioned the aforementioned rock, the ice floors that can be shattered by ground pounding and stuff like that. It's interesting in that the mechanics are fine, but they're not too, like, they're not off the wall or very surprising. And the thing about it is that normally that wouldn't bother me because I just like solving puzzles. But the game itself was really, really easy. And what I mean by that is I beat the entire game plus the bonus stage you unlock for beating the original 30 levels in an hour. That includes the platinum trophy that comes with that beating of the game.
So yeah, sounds like a classic Rattleika platformer.
Yep. So, like,
not that that's a problem. I have no problem with a $5 game I can beat in an hour and then never go back to. Like, that's $5 well spent in my eyes. That was an hour of entertainment I had.
That's the thing. For me, it's a little different. Like, it's not that it's a bad game or anything like that, but which is why, like, my go-to is going to be, it's good for, like, if you're, like, new to puzzlers or you're looking for, like, a beginner puzzler to play with, like, somebody, because it's got the co-op mode. But for me, like when I boot up a puzzler, I like that. I mean, maybe it's because I've been playing them for a long time. I don't know. But I like that steady start where it's like, okay, I'm getting the mechanics. Okay, get it. Okay, now that I got it, hit me with the meaty stuff, the hard stuff that makes me utilize these abilities. I want to stop and think about a puzzle where I have to figure out the solution. But in this game, it was never like that, never occurred. It was very much you start a level and the solution's pretty much there. It's just start with this, and then I can do this, and then I can just like, I guess the best way to describe it, like they weren't multi-layered puzzles. It was more like step one, step two, step three, and the steps were very noticeable. So that's not a knock on the game as a whole. It's just the idea, like when people are talking about games and they're like, okay, like I want to, like it's like when you're talking to people who like to play puzzle games, you got to let them know, okay, this one is pretty light. This one, like Baba Is You, that is not light. You'll be scratching your damn head, and that's how
dude,
you
that
describe
game is so good. Okay, it's Baba Is You fucking rules.
It really, really does. It's one of the best.
That game's so good.
But like, if I mentioned that game to somebody and didn't mention this game is tough, they might come into the game and be like, "Oh, wow, you didn't tell me how hard this was. I don't play games that are this rough for puzzlers. I don't want to get this frustrated." Kindy Well will not frustrate you like at all. Like it'll be a easy, breezy, fun time. Like, you'll enjoy it. Just don't come into it expecting to get your head scratching for any reason. Like you'll just go into it and go, okay, I did my thing and I'm done. That's fine. But I wanted to get that out there because I think to me, I think with the puzzle game, that's a very important distinction to make. But I would hope that if the developer is listening to this or Radaleka is listening and they are in contact with the developer, they'd be like, hey, if you decide to make a new puzzle game, slap some more secret stages in there. What I mean by like more complicated levels.
It sounds like your only gripe with this game is that it ends.
Pretty much. It ended before it ramped up.
Makes sense. Well, it's $5. What do you think?
I'd say it's a solid try it title.
Cool.
What did you think?
I thought there'd be more.
No, there's. I mean, I pretty much laid out all the caveats during the dialogue. Like, it's a pretty much a try it. Like, you heard what I said. So essentially, I mean, it's up your alley. It's definitely a try
it. Yeah, I had fun with it. Like I said, these are the kind of games I really enjoy from Radaleka. Just the quick $5. I hate saying easy completion because it sounds like it's just a cheap money grab for achievements, but it kind of is, and I don't care.
Well, I will say this at least. This is one of the rare ones, I think, where
it makes you beat the whole game.
No, that's what I was about to say. Like, on one hand, the achievements aren't hard to find, but there are a few that you have to actually do something beyond just playing the game to get them. Like, there were at least three or four, that I had to do something different to get them. But I was able to realize what they were just by playing the game. Like, oh, yeah, there it is. I got our achievement for that. Versus just doing the things I was curious about it.
Yeah, well. Now that's it. Yeah. We're done.
We're a kind duo of duos.
Yeah, we made it through another one.
One more show down. Not without Brooke dropping something or spilling something or just making a bunch of noise randomly.
Yeah, like what the fuck? What are we going to do with you?
Spill corner over here.
Oh my God.
What'd you spill today, Brooke? Well, today I spilled a very good bouillabaisse.
Tune in next week when I learn how to silence my phone before checking John's thing. My God. He immediately came in and joined the Twitch chat too. He's like, it's not our fault, you guys.
No, it is. Hey, you gotta give credit. That's respect right there. That's appreciation. It's like, I got your back. I'm gonna join the chat to support the noise.
It's okay. But was it a good video?
As soon as it started playing, I panicked. Once he just dropped the phone, which made even more noise. I was like, oh no, I think they heard.
Well, now you're going to go back to the business. Like, this video better been worth it. And now it's not going to be able to measure up to your expectations.
I'm going to watch it as soon as this is over. I'm going to be just finding gats on the Switch, but I'm about to find out what was in that video.
Wow. I just got a text message of a picture of my pizza outside of my apartment.
Oh, my God.
How long has it been there, though?
Well, I mean, I brought it in before the show started.
Oh, my God. That's the photo you just got.
Yeah.
I thought you ordered another pizza. You'd have a frozen pizza by now. Shoot.
What, you think I'm rich? Like, I got San Francisco money up in here?